Hello, and welcome to the Inside EV's Tesla Cast for January the 29th, 2021. This is episode number 43. Our top stories today: Tesla reports a profit, Model S and X refresh revealed, and Tesla vehicles will guess your gear. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's editor and Inside EV's forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios, family of YouTube channels. He also puts together the supercalifragilisticexpialidocious videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And if you like the podcast, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, which helps others discover us and spread the word about EVs. And if you're watching us on YouTube, we'd love a thumbs up there as well, of course. And good morning to you, Jason. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience, and Jason. So what's charging up in the driveways this weekend or this week? Kyle, you didn't have anything electric this week, right? They got you like a F-150 still.
Oh, so I had an F-150. I had the new refreshed E-Class, which was amazing. Mild hybrid, by the way. The F-150 was a full hybrid. This week, I have a Land Cruiser, not electric, but the new Land Rover Defender as well, which is a mild hybrid and something I'm personally very excited about, but not for this show.
Okay. Well, I mean, those are both of the vehicles to keep in mind as we go forward with other like electric vehicles coming up, like the Rivian R1S, the SUV. So that's a good benchmark. Like,
absolutely.
Right?
A lot of off-roading both this week. A lot of comparisons.
Both of those would be good to benchmark against the Rivian R1S. Tom, I understand you have a Porsche in your driveway.
First off, how many cups of coffee do you have this morning, Don?
Only
that
this morning.
That was a juiced up intro, I tell you. but it was good. Last night, Porsche dropped off a nice Taycan 4S for me. Haven't really had a chance to drive it much. I took it for a really quick spin this morning to get my, you know, absolutely required morning fuel. And one thing I will note, like I said, I don't have a lot to say about it because I just got it. It's the 4S trim definitely feels less premium than the previous Taycans that I've driven. And in the past, I drove the Turbo S from Copenhagen, Denmark to Hamburg, Germany. And then I drove a Turbo, not the S, from Georgia to Florida. So I've driven Taycans over 1,000 miles, and I probably had the longest press driving on a Taycan until Kyle decided to take one from New York to California. But that's Kyle, you know, he always has to be number one. Things like the charge port that you actually have to like press so it pops open. You know, I like the automatic one. You just slide your finger under it, and it automatically opens up. You can definitely tell that, you know, there's a difference in the trim levels. So I'll be getting this thing out this week. We're actually going to get a good amount of snow here this week. So I wanted to show the Model 3 in the garage above it on that last shot. You'll be able to see me driving this thing in the snow because we're supposed to get 8 to 10 inches in a couple of days, and I don't know how that's going to affect. I was going to do a nice long road trip. I have to see where the storm's going to go, but I'm looking forward to offering you guys more impressions on this next week.
I've not seen those aero wheels before,
yeah.
In sort of up close and not just in press shots, and they're much better than sort of the aero bit of them. If I can pause it, is kind of that. Kind of disappears away, so all you really see are the spokes. So it's a clever way of doing an aero wheel without horrible aero wheels.
And the funny thing is, Martin, this morning when I pulled up to grab my cup of coffee, I know a lot of people that in the morning it's like a crew of regulars. The first thing that they said was, "We don't like the wheels."
What?
So that was their initial impression. They're like,
"Nice.
Don't like the wheels." You know, and I get where you're coming from, but I will say, in person, that black trim in the middle doesn't go away as nicely as it does in pictures. So you see that stands out a lot more. I'm not saying that I think they're ugly, but That illusion goes away when you're up close.
Oh, that's a shame.
So, you know, I mean, it's still there, but not quite as much.
And did you do this video at dusk or something? Because that color, there's something about the color on the screen, just as I'm watching it, just looks a bit like, oh, I've just spent $100,000, and it's a bit, like, it just doesn't scream Porsche at me.
Yeah, you know, I
hate to be that guy.
to be honest with you, I liked this color more in pictures than I have when I saw it up close now. I'm still a little on the fence about it. I'm not in love with it. And yeah, it was at dusk. They dropped it off at like, I don't know, around 5 o'clock last night, right when the sun was going down. So, I the jury's still out. But I felt a little disappointed when I saw it in person as opposed to when I've seen it on videos and pictures. But Kyle, didn't you have a Taycan in this color already or no?
No. Okay. Briefly in California for another thing, but just for a day. But yeah, love the color. I actually think the wheels are pretty neat. But I disagree with your thing about the 4S being cheaper. I think the one you drove just had a lot of options. And I think you can get all of those options on the 4S.
Okay, very good. That could very well be. You know, the media cars, especially the when they give you the top of the line, the Turbo S, they put every single possible available option in it. My first impression getting in this, there's like a Taycan emblem on the center console. It looked like cheap plastic, like I could just snap it off. And I didn't feel like I felt when I sat in the Turbo S. In Europe, when I sat in it, it felt like this was just like the ultimate Porsche electric car. Like,
yeah, there's no difference on perfect. That stuff. Yeah. You can spec all that on the 4S. You probably just had a max spec Turbo or Turbo S right. when you were in Europe.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. This doesn't have the passenger screen, which is an option. You know, the fifth screen, sort of space where the passenger can play with. But like I said, I've driven the thing 8 miles already, so this is I need some more time with it.
This is a 2021 too, right?
I think it was a 2020.
Bummer. The 2021s get plug-in charge, and interestingly, you can limit the maximum charge rate to 200 kilowatt instead of 270 for battery longevity, and to increase the time at the charger so it doesn't complete while you're still having breakfast.
Yeah, the one question I asked was, does it have plug-in charge when it was delivered? And the answer I got back was, no, it doesn't. So it's a 20. They emailed me the spec sheet last night, but honestly, I didn't even open up my email yet. Like I said, I just got this thing.
Well, I like the color. It's like very close to my 2015 Spark EV. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is close to your Spark. That's interesting.
It is. Which is, car looks kind of cool in this babyish blue color, too.
I'm just concerned that I'd get sick of it. It looks nice, but I think it's one of those colors that if I had it for a long time, after like 6 months, I would feel a little tired of it. Color is such a subjective thing. I can't judge the car on that.
Right.
Yeah, I think actually, Taycan dark green bronze wheels. That's the move. Nice. Shmi style.
Well, there's Stephen Ewing from Roadshow has a Taycan this week, and his is, what was it, like rose over purple or something? I kind of like that color too.
The roses are all the rear wheel drives. Are
that's they? The new one, right? That wasn't available. That's the new lower spec one.
You should take your baby blue one back to them and say, you want the new one.
Yeah, that'll go over well.
I think Brandon is driving the new one on Motor One. One of our colleagues on the other side is driving a rear wheel drive. So we'll have that reported on soon.
That's true. All right. So let's move along. So as you may have already guessed, today's show is heavily Tesla-oriented. The California company not only reported its fourth quarter earnings, as part of that, they also revealed details of the Model S and Model X refresh, with Plaid replacing the performance trim level and in the case of the Model S, adding a Plaid Plus level. I don't know if we want to discuss the numbers at all, but I think it's worth noting that this is the sixth profitable quarter in a row, and almost all the good numbers went up. Automotive revenue was $9.314 billion, and energy and storage revenue was up to $752 million, which is kind of interesting to me. That's only 7-8% of automotive revenue when we want to see those businesses kind of be on equal footing, you know, after a few years. But on a more auto-related note, the automotive gross margin was 21%, and that's excluding regulatory credits. So throw in the regulatory credits they get, and that's a GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles, a gross margin of 25.6%. So, you know, both of those numbers look pretty good, I think. I just throw that out there because people always say, oh, but they get all these regulatory credits. You know, they couldn't make it without it. They could. They wouldn't be able to go as fast maybe, but whatever. So we've known for some time that there's something going on with the Model S and Model X. The production line was shut down for 18 days. Rumors and guesses were flying. Well, that's all history now because we have word straight from the source. The statement announcing the refresh reads as follows. Over the past few weeks, we have been upgrading our Fremont factory to launch the new Model S and Model X. These changes include a new powertrain, battery modules, battery packs, and drive units, an entirely new interior, exterior updates, and other improvements. Production will resume in Q1 and ramp back to full capacity over time. And yeah, that's it. So when this went out, the Tesla website was updated, and the refreshed Model S and X and the Plaid Plus were all there. So now there's a lot to talk about, and I'm hoping we can be a little methodical, at least at first, in talking about the changes. So I wanted to start with the exterior styling. Not a whole lot going on there, Tom, right? What do you think of the small changes you see?
Yeah, you know, the front end looks like the lower section has been cleaned up a little bit, maybe just a little bit smoother. Also, it looks like it's allowed to, it's opened up a little bit more, maybe to allow more air to come in, but for better cooling. But overall, right. I mean, you know, other than the chrome delete is probably the biggest, the biggest change, that visual change, in my opinion, besides the front. And that, I think the taillights are a little bit different in the back now. But, I mean, somebody driving down the road on this, you know, that isn't a Tesla aficionado, you know, could easily just think it was, you know, the same model that they've been seeing for the last 6 years. So the exterior is really not where Tesla focused to make the big changes.
So what do you think about this blackout trim? Kyle and I were arguing about this yesterday a little bit, and I guess I'm an old man because I don't know. Like, I'm thinking,
well, you're an old man regardless, but you're an old man because of the trim, yeah, that you like a chrome trim.
No, I don't like the chrome trim. I personally, for me, I like the black, except like on the door handles and on and the little thing behind the front wheel on the front fender there. I would color key them to the car.
Oh, yes. Okay. So you go right door.
That's better than my understanding of your argument. I'm sorry yesterday to fight with you on the Motor One podcast.
Yeah, I kind of lean towards what Dom's saying on the door handles. And I also think that is a generational thing. I think some of the younger Tesla fans might really like the blackout trim, how it stands out. And I know this. I mean, I talk to a lot of people about my cars, and I'm at a lot of local events and so forth. And I remember when I got the Model 3, I talked to a few of my friends who some of them have Model 3, some of them want to get them. And they were like 50-50 on whether they liked the blackout or not. And the funny thing was, the older people, my older friends want the chrome, and the younger people like the blackout. But the color coding, it, I think, is definitely something that I think almost everybody could agree on some of it, like the door handles. I think that they would look nice with if they were body coated.
So we have the Model X up here on the screen right now, and it's in white with a black tour, and it doesn't really bother me at all on this version of it, you know. But still. I do like the blackout trim though on the Model 3 and Model Y, because to me, I think that it was sporty. Like I was saying the call yesterday, back in the 80s, blackout trim was like there's a few models that would come out and it would create a lot of excitement. It would be blackout trim, like the European spec, and like the Pontiac 6000 STE with all the headlights across the front. Yeah, that was one that had the Euro blackout trim thing going on. Anyway, yeah, but so yeah, not a whole lot of changes to the outside. Maybe that blow the front and the bumper is a little more open, do you think, for better cooling, Kyle?
Sorry, my internet went out.
Right. So I'm saying there's not a whole lot of changes, just mostly like the front opening on the bottom.
Yeah,
the bottom.
Exterior. Tom hit all the things. You have homogeneous rear taillights, which means you can no longer see the individual bulbs around the outside. Okay. You have the exact same headlight units, which I would say are subpar. Right. You have missed a huge opportunity to spice this car up a bit, and. Right. The X in particular needed it, but the S is still, I think, the best looking model in the lineup. But it's not setting any design trends continuously. I think a lot of new cars in the market look great. The one thing the S has always managed to do, though, is look modern throughout its entire 9 years or 8 years of production. So I think they started with a really good base. It doesn't look bad now. And, you know, maybe they don't need to redesign it. They're taking the Apple approach with the iMac. It's looked the same forever now because it just looks good. What more do you need?
I mean, it's not going to be it's not a volume vehicle anyway for them anymore. I think that the most they were going to sell like 50,000, and maybe that's down to like half of that now or something.
Flagship. It was like 17 or 18,000 combined, a quarter, ignore COVID quarter because of shutdown. But it was between 15 and 20,000 most quarters recently anyway for the combined figure. We don't know the split. I would presume the S takes the lion's share, but these are just cars to sit at the top of the range now, to be kind of halo cars, to show off the best engineering, which in a way is what it should do. The best engineering, the tri-motor setup should all start on their most expensive cars and then, trickle down to the rest of the range. But in terms of how many they sell, I think if you're working on the production lines for these cars, you're probably not working at such a furious pace as, you know, your colleagues in the tent making the threes and whys. So... These do sell in smaller numbers. Kyle, what were you saying about the wheels a couple of days ago when you saw this? Because you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, so the aero wheels don't really apply, but if you spec the $4,500 upgraded wheel option, you'll notice that they call them arachnids. They're different than the original arachnids. But if you look at the outer last, let's just say, 2 inches of the wheel, right where the tire hits the wheel, you'll notice they flatten out all of those angles. And what I think they're doing, especially on like the Model 3 Sport wheel, is it's almost completely flat. And the best example of this is actually Model X 22-inch wheel. This really reduces the aerodynamic drag, this design technique. It may not look as good visually, but I think they're actually able to have a much more aero wheel because the part of the wheel that's moving the farthest, the outer part, is dead flat and it's not catching any air. So click the that right there. You'll see those little inserts. So in effect, it has the same aero impact as, let's just say, a 19-inch wheel instead of a 22, because you have all that flat surface. Again, I'm not a wheel aerodynamics expert, but I think this is a pretty neat trick.
Well, on the Model S with the new wheels and everything and whatever they've done to the body, it all works together to give it a CD, an aerodynamic, the number is?
Coefficient of drag.
Thank you. 0.208. So that makes it previously the Lucid Air had the slipperiest body at point 0.21. So this is 0.02 better.
Well, than a non-production vehicle. It's better than nothing right now. So we'll see what Lucid.
Well, this is technically it's not production either yet.
That's a good point. Although they said they're in production now.
Actually, they're
making. You can't buy one right now.
Right.
You got to wait a couple of days.
Yeah. But for all intents and purposes, right. Okay. So let's move inside the vehicle then and take a look. So basically, to me, they've sort of Model 3, Model Y-ified. Like the Tesla Model S and X. And so, you know, it looks very much like a Model 3 or Model X inside or Model Y inside the Model S and X now, except upscale. It's definitely like upscale. And maybe we'll leave the wheel to talk about a little bit later, but just like generally, Martin, what are your thoughts on this?
Cream interior, the white interior for me, I'll give my opinion on a person who isn't in a position to buy a $100,000 car, but the cream for me, the white was always two white. Okay. I've got a buddy that I came to see in the US, and he'd just taken delivery of his so it was absolutely, there'd been no blue jeans on it at all, and he gave me a little ride around in his Model S a couple of years ago, and fresh from the factory, and it was so beautiful, but I was so scared that the single mark would just bother me. And it was just, you know, that white interior is for me, I think that if I'm driving around, that white interior lights up the inside of the cabin. And you're driving along and you can sort of see straight through, and it sort of lights up the inside. I kind of like to be not a tinted window kind of gangster style, but I certainly would like a little more a little darker inside. But this cream interior and the walnut decor, talking of old guys liking something traditional, it really appeals to me. I like it. But of course, the new black interior, they've got the this new style black interior, I think is really nice. It is more premium. As I was arguing with somebody yesterday who was just espousing the amazing talents of Tesla's design team to do the inside, and I just pointed out, like I said, when was the last time you got in a $100,000 or $140,000 car? And they couldn't remember. I was like, go and sit in some cars that cost $100,000. And that's how to do an interior. That is how to make you feel $1 million when you get in and slam the door, and it's a proper thud. And you look around, you're like, this is a nice place to be inside. And they didn't want to accept my argument that Tesla is about engineering and software. And actually, if you want the best engineering in an EV, full stop, and the best software probably in a car, full stop, buy a Tesla. If you want to get inside a $140,000 car and feel like, this is I've spent some proper money and I feel great, don't buy one of these cars, because this feels like a £50,000 mid-range good German car. That interior is not the interior of a very luxurious car. But that's not why you should buy it. But they didn't want that. They didn't want to hear my argument. So I think it's nice. They've done a good job with it. They've kind of caught up. I don't know if I can. Yeah, I can. So they haven't updated the UK website. Not that I'm bitter, but I see on the US site I can now scroll through. So I can now. Yeah. I've now got some options and having a look through. And also somewhere I just found, because it's the old style. The UK site is the old style that you might recognize, but somewhere inside, it feature details. So yeah, so you can see right. The new.
We have these on the US site too.
The new screen in the back, which is amazing, and again, I'd love to know how the front and the rear screens join up. You know, enough processing power to be equivalent to whatever it is, a PlayStation 5. I read online.
Right, you can play Cyberpunk on it. Elon was
right,
saying, which it's, is it's a, just, intense game.
Right. It's insane what they've done. It just takes what you use your car for to a whole new level. Like, I'm just going to go outside and play a game for a couple of hours in the driveway. Be back in a bit. You know, why not? So the processing power is incredible. And actually, I'd love to know how the front and the rear screens join up. So if you're on a road trip, and you've got three wireless controllers, can the person in the passenger seat and the two kids in the back all play interactively, like a challenge game or a puzzle game or something? Like, can you pass the hours by competing interactively? Cool. So I'd like to know how that in the real world how that all fits together. So they've done some good stuff. Like, they've put in this amazing sort of rear screen for the kids or your rear passengers, a bigger screen with a very high resolution screen at the front. They've done the climate on the inside, so they've actually improved the 3 and the Y climate. What are they got a brand name for it, Airwave or something. But they've actually changed that invisible venting system that powers the air off of the windscreen and then at the driver. So they've done some really clever stuff, and it's a big update on the interior. It's still not a luxury car, but I'll carry on that argument.
Sure. I mean, I try to use the word premium. Somebody called me out yesterday for calling. I use the word luxury, and really, I like premium is a better word for it. But I like the design language like this better than some luxury cars. I like that, it's nice and clean. It's just very super clean. And I like this new touch actually too. This is like what they're doing to the Model Y in China. If you can see, the wood trim extends past the dash onto the door. And if we look in the back seat, you can see it there's like it breaks up for a second, but then it continues like halfway past the back door into the back of the cabin.
I thought the rear doors were overly fussy, says the person who is not in a position to buy one of these cars.
Right. Well, they have
I don't know if I can find a
too.
Picture. And it's you know, it's I might not be
so
able
the,
to find a picture.
So
for you
the
now,
new the new screen in front is what a 17 inch, and it has a slight tilt. You can it'll tilt left to right a little bit, I guess,
right.
Which is kind of neat, and yeah. It's a little bit bigger. What's in the Model 3? A 15 and a half inch? Tom?
Don't I.
You know?
I don't know the exact dimensions, it's but 15. That sounds right. I was going to say 15
okay.
exactly, but
okay.
Yeah, it's right in that ballpark.
So 17 makes it, it's kind of nice. It kind of opens it up.
Yeah. So Martin, what you're saying is that some Tesla fans, you can't convince them that everything that Tesla's doing isn't absolutely the best that anybody can do? Is that what you're trying to insinuate here?
I know you're surprised at that. And all I would say is keep an open mind. There are people out there that think they can do no wrong.
Well, I certainly agree. I mean, there's no use in me just repeating what Martin said. Pretty much he nailed it as far as on the interior, as far as I'm concerned. You know, one of the things that I never liked about the Model S was the interior. Even from the get-go, I thought it was just, you know, but I understand that's not what you bought the car for. You bought the car for the tech. You bought the car for, you know, it was at the time back in 2012, it was revolutionary. The electric vehicles just didn't go that far on a charge, weren't that fast. So, you know, that they nailed everything else, but the interior was definitely the afterthought. And with this refresh, as far as I'm concerned, now it's acceptable. I looked at the interior as borderline unacceptable previously. I would not be happy with a Model S. I just didn't like the way the whole interior looked. And now it's not like the X5 plug-in hybrid I drove last week, the BMW, which has an absolutely, you know, beautiful interior. But it is acceptable, and it's actually very nice for a minimalistic interior. I think they nailed it. I like pretty much everything they've done. I'm still a little on the fence about that center console in the back. I hope that it allows you to control, and I know that I'm not the one saying this first. I think Kyle brought it up on the podcast yesterday that they did. It needs to be able to control the heating and cooling for the rear seats, because that's always been a problem where the rear passengers in the Model S can't control their HVAC. They have to ask somebody from the front, hey, can you turn on the seats? Can you turn on the heat? And that, you know, in a car of that size, you know, a nice, you know, full-size premium car, the rear passenger should be able to control their own HVAC. And as far as the screen for the infotainment, like, you know, if it would be cool if what Martin said, that you can have some kind of interactive gaming with the front passengers. But let's face it, most people that can drop $100,000 or $80,000, $90,000 on a car, if they have kids in the back seat, they're going to have their own tablets. You know, they're going to play their own games that are preloaded on their own tablets. If there's multiple kids, you don't want them fighting over the one little screen. So, you know, I'm, you know, it looks cool, but I until we get all the details on what this center screen can do, I don't know if it's that big of an improvement. That's my least, you know, favorite, say, improvement on this, other than the fact that if it can control the climate control, that's important to me.
So can we look at the back seat again for a second? I just want to point something out. So
I'm not sure I can find the pictures of the rear. I found them yesterday, but I don't know where they are now.
If you just go to like the Model S page, and but don't
click
yeah,
buy. That's where they are. Yes, if I go to that, and then it's you scroll down on the homepage. I'm always too quick to go to order
right.
now, obviously.
Right. Same.
and have a look at what I can't afford. So right. yeah. Here we go. So it'll be down here. Is that right?
I believe so. So I just found it kind of up a little bit more. I think.
Yeah, and I'll go across.
I think
it's
one of the side moving screens. Yeah,
there
we go. So yeah, this is kind of cool. So the back seat now is more two and two. It's more executive oriented, and I think this is some of the influence from China coming in, because they like being driven. You know, if you're an executive in China, you're not necessarily going to be driving your own car, and this makes the back seat like a nicer place, and it even has like. The wireless chargers in the phone and in the armrest in the back seat there, which is pretty nice. So, well, I think I don't know. What do you guys think of that?
I like it. The interior is real. Sorry, Kyle. The interior all around. I think they nailed it. Huge upgrade.
Okay.
Let's not forget Tesla used to offer the executive rear seat option.
That's true.
Which for, I believe, a one model year, they had the sculpted rear seats that were arguably much more luxurious than this, and no one bought them. So, you know, we'll see. This is a good compromise. The one thing that I'm not so sure about is, Martin, can you find the picture of the seats folded? Because I don't know if they fold flat with the bolsters that thick.
Part of the announcement was with our fold flat rear seats, you can right. get
no,
luggage
I know
in.
They call them fold flat, but I still think there might be a bit of an angle.
Let's find that the picture of the bike.
Next
a bike
gen
somewhere.
Seats are bad.
In the Model X.
There you go.
The Model X picture with the bicycle in the back. Yeah, it looks like that there's one. Still a bit of an angle yeah, there to me.
Yeah, a little bit of an angle, but flat enough, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Model 3 doesn't go super, super dead flat either. Yeah, no, I think it's kind of neat. I think there's a huge miss here. There's still no rear door rear seat pockets, which Model 3 has, right. which S has never had. For the first time, so I owned a Model S for, I think, a year, maybe a little over a year. So I have, like, a lot of real-world annoyances with it that they fixed here, such as door pockets. That's a big right. deal. Imagine getting your Starbucks every day and trying to put your wrapper somewhere in the car and not in the door pocket. That was really annoying. Yeah, I hate the steering wheel. We have to talk about that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it real soon. But just one last thing I want to mention. So I can't even remember. I think it might have been the ID4, but they were talking about the seats and the back seats of the back of those seats, like from the back seat, you have a little pocket you can stick your smartphone in. It's like it's just a small pocket. It's kind of nice.
But don't you want to use your smartphone?
That's a good point. I mean,
yeah. Why are you trying to put your smartphone away? It's like all of these new cars, right? We're so lucky. We get cars to test all the time. They have like wireless chargers in them, just to say on the spec sheet it has a wireless charger. But they're in front of cup holders, and you can never get your phone out and put your drinks in the cup holder. And wireless CarPlay never connects. It's like they're just trying to add stuff to add stuff. Right. So I don't know. I think this is a great interior from my impression is. Hugely needed interior. This should have come out 3 years ago. Absolutely gorgeous, I think. Is it better than the Lucid Air visually? Maybe. I think the biggest thing for me will be as soon as I sit in this car and drive it, is it going to have the intangibles, the bank vault solidity that a modern Mercedes would have, a modern BMW, for example? I still am not totally convinced that'll be the case. If they can get there, then it would be a real winner in my book. I just think they're missing out on other luxury features like massaging seats. Sounds silly.
Right.
Guess what? I've had a E-Class all week, and it's the best thing ever. Honestly, physically less back pain after having that vehicle than before it arrived.
It is kind of nice.
It's so nice. And
if it's a luxury vehicle, you know, that's one of those things, like you say, it's like that's kind of like
you need it. Like an E-Class has it. This is supposed to be nicer. Also, the seats are ventilated, but I don't believe they're cooled. So it'll just blow warm air on you or suck warm air through like they used to do, which really was useless. So sorry for complaining. But I think they're like 70 or 80% of the way there. But we don't know yet. But my guess is maybe they haven't done the last 10 or 20% to just make it on the level that it really needs to be for someone getting out of an S-Class to get into this and go, okay, this is comparable.
Right. So, okay, so the other little things about the car. So you get it in, and so if you look at this shot right here, right behind on the door panel is like nice fabric now, which is kind of like the Volvo thing, you know, it just makes it feel a little bit more premium inside. I think it's on the back door as well. Anyway, so the thing, the elephant in the room is like, what's up with that steering wheel, man? So apparently the Model S is going to have like be available in some markets, possibly maybe with a yoke steering wheel. That's how it was presented to us. And it's man, I didn't, when I first saw it, I just immediately thought that's not real. That's not going to be an actual option. But you know, as I poked around, and Elon was tweeting yesterday, and I guess that's the intention, but we're not even sure if it's going to make it. I don't know. But so Tom, you've driven a car, you wrote about the wheel, and you've driven a car, the EQS, Mercedes EQS, with this style of wheel. Now there's different ways of implementing it, so like the car you had, it wasn't like a, like you could get this in like an F1 car. F1 cars have, Formula One cars have like this kind of a steering wheel. But in the UQ, it wasn't implemented like that same way in the UQS. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, so as you said, F1 cars have these steering yokes, not round wheels. Aircraft have steering yokes, but those vehicles don't need to make really sharp turns. Right. You know, the F1 vehicles are so tight that you there's very little play in the wheel to make the amount of turns that you need to do. When I drove the Mercedes EQS Vision Concept, it had that type of a yoke. And Mercedes rented out an airfield for us to drive back and forth, up and down. And I tell you, I get to the end to make the turn and realize that you can't make the turn without like putting your here. So then letting go, grabbing the wheel. It was like I was alone on the airfield and I felt like I was going to crash in the turn. And, you know, it just... I find it hard to believe that this is going to actually make it to production. I think it's, you know, I guess it can, but I really find it hard to believe that they're going to implement this. It would have to have some kind of adaptive steering ratio, you know, and now you're getting involved where you're asking people to relearn how they drive a car. And, you know, people are bad drivers as it is. We all see that out there in vehicles that they're so used to driving their entire lives, they still can't drive. So, you know, I'm still really leery about this. And I don't know if this is ever going to happen. I you know, Elon's a master at making people talk about what he's doing and staying, you know, in at the top of the news, which we talked about before. I know it really looks like they're intending on doing this. It's for crying out loud. It's on the design studio. It appears as though you can order a car now with this. But I still need to see more about this. I don't know how they're going to implement it and how it's going to be safe and how people are going to be able to deal with it. You know, it's a weird experience for those who haven't driven a car with a yoke like this. It's hard to describe. You know, you get to a point in the turn where you don't know what to do. And you know, you have to make a split second decision. Do I let go of the bottom of the wheel and grab the top? So it can't be like that where you have to actually cross your arms.
No, you can't. More than 90 degrees, I think, is about the limit, really.
You know, so yeah. And like I said, then it would have to have some adaptive steering ratio, which would take getting used to, I think, for the average driver, which, you know, you have to plan and make products for like the least capable person to be able to handle, not, you know, experienced, you know, auto enthusiasts. So I don't know. What do you guys think about this? I'm a little perplexed.
Before everyone loses their minds, there will be the traditional steering wheel available with this car. There's a picture. It was buried in the Tesla website somewhere that someone dug out. I don't know if you have a picture of it there anywhere, Martin.
I've got it somewhere. Give me 2 seconds.
Sure. But also, while we're looking at it, we got the yoke on it. It looks like a koala bear. You know, if you look at the middle, that is like at the koala nose and the the squirrel wheels of the eyes. I don't know. I saw a picture of that on Facebook yesterday, and it said, you know, once you see it, you can't. And I was just looking at this, and all I could see is koala. Anyway, sorry about that, everybody. All right, so we will be able to get a full round steering wheel with Model S and Model X. But this is still kind of interesting, and I'm still really curious. I still kind of want to try it out because I mean it would be very driver, you know. It's be all about the driving experience and your hands and the wheels. You know, every little movement of your hands is going to adjust where the car is going. I think it'd be great to drive a car like that, but like in a passenger car with, you know, everybody and their aunts and uncles, you know, it's got to be very intuitive somehow. And I just don't know if it's possible if we were there with that, you know, with like a variable steering rack, you know. So once you get up, you know, 40 degrees or so, the amount that the wheels turn increases more, and then that would be also speed. You know, the faster you go, the less action there would be. I don't know. Kyle, have you driven anything with a variable rack like that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Variable racks are really neat, but I've never driven one with a variable rack that's going to have to be aggressive enough to make this steering wheel usable. A lot of new cars have variable steering ratios. I think it's a fantastic feature. I would always spec it, even if it's $1,500, $2,000, changes the driving experience. Not really a fan of that whole thing. My biggest thing is all safety. not even just in general driving, but in panic emergency situations, right. Someone's going to grab a wheel. The other weird thing about this, just to segue in, because I think everyone's been talking about the wheel, is the gear selector. And Dominic, will you walk us through how this car goes forwards to reverse? Because this is just mind-bogglingly stupid to me. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. Before we touch that, I just wanted to say also the turn signals on the stocks, there are no stocks on this, right? So the turn signals are on the – and they're both on the same side. I'm not sure what's up with that. I think it should have been one on each side, you know? So
well, it's almost better because I've driven turn signals on wheels before. And when you're 180 degrees turned, like every Ferrari is like this, for example, you always get them mixed up. And so maybe this is – they did some study where you kind of know based off your thumb placement which one's the top and which one's the bottom.
So you've driven a Ferrari with a style wheel?
Oh, yeah. With the they're not on one side, but they're on individual.
But it was the yoke style wheel?
Not yoke style, but the turn signals were on the wheel.
Oh, I see.
They don't have stocks on them because they have the shift.
Because you said 180 degrees, and in my mind, I was picturing like the yoke and your.
No, it's just if you're turning a normal wheel. No. Yeah, you always get them mixed up. But I'm not a fan of controls on steering wheels because, you know, we spend a lot of time on track. We have a lot of new drivers on track. And sometimes their hand placement, they get freaked out and they start hitting a whole bunch of controls and the wipers start going on Ferraris. And it's all a mess, I think.
Gotcha. All right. So, yeah. So it's quite clear that Elon likes a very clean look on his interiors. And so there's no gear stocks on this. There's no windshield wipers. There's no... a gear selector. So how does it know, you know, park, forward, reverse, drive, all that? It knows where you want to go. It's kind of guesses. So if, say you parked in your garage, you get in, you know, it turns on automatically. You don't have to turn on any start stop buttons. It knows that you're in the car, and you have your foot on the brake. As you let your foot off the brake and touch the accelerator, it's going to go backwards because it knows there's a wall in front of it and it can't go forwards. So you must want to go backwards. And then you'll pull backwards, and then you'll stop. And then when you press the accelerator again, I guess it's going to know that you're going to want to go forward, possibly. But it's going to get you're going to have an option. I don't know how this is going to work. It's going to tell you, I guess, on the screen which way it's going to go when you know, as you take your foot off the brake or with your you come to a stop. It's got to tell you what it's going to do next. It's got to tell you that, right? So if it says the wrong direction, like it wants to reverse even more, you can reach over on the screen and touch that. And we don't know if the screen in front of the driver is a touch screen, but I assume it's probably not. It's probably still just the middle screen.
I already have two dogs that need micromanaging because they have minds of their own and they go places they shouldn't go. And now I have to worry about my car when I go into a launch mode, just flying backwards out of the drive. What if I want to launch forwards really quick? Like depending on how it's implemented, if it is implemented as deeply as they say, where every single move the car is deciding forward and back, imagine stop and go traffic when you have a car in front of you and behind you. How's it going to choose which way to go there? And so I just think
if going forward, it's always going to go forward.
Oh, I know. That was just over embellishing. But like, you know, this is terrible. I would turn that off immediately. I'm sure there's a way to turn it off and you can override. But like, come on,
there's no stocks. There's nothing to override.
You do this one time during a drive. I don't need my car doing it all the time.
I'm curious because I do like the way it looks like that with no stocks because that, you know, it makes it so much nicer looking. But can it be like, you know, as second nature? Well, you know, I don't know. It's good. I don't know, Martin. What do you think about how successful do you think this is going to be implemented?
Like, I tend to use my wife as a focus group of one, which is always a dangerous thing to do. But she drives as a utility. So she learned to drive to get places. Like, I learned to drive, firstly, because I grew up in the middle of nowhere in the countryside. That's what I wanted to get away. But mostly because I enjoy driving. She's the opposite. So I know that she, because then she could never understand why cars were so complicated. Because, you know, she and I learned when there was the choke to, you know, when the car was cold.
Right.
And of course, you know, you were checking the oil every couple of days. And, you know, she couldn't get on with manual cars. She's like, why isn't a car forwards and backwards? So then we bought an automatic and she was happy. She will love this level of automation, because presumably you stop the car and then you don't do anything, and then you open the door and you don't do anything. So you come to a stop and auto braking will hold it. On a hill, in your garage, whatever, when you're finished, you open the door, you walk away, the car will turn itself off, the car will put the handbrake on. Like, she loves that level of the car just knowing what she wants to do. But I'm not so sure about the forwards and backwards thing, because she doesn't want to get nerdy with a car. So whilst Tesla engineers or why Elon Musk might think that it's a cool thing to do, like, oh, wow, you can, if you're not sure if your car was to go back or forth, just check on the screen, because you've got the RND, you know, on the Tesla screens in the top corner. Just see what it says and make sure it matches. She's not doing that. So there's good and bad with this. And I think, like all these things, I think you get used to them. Like, there's always a comfort zone that we're in, and you'll just get used to it. But I would definitely override that, because I don't want the car. Something, you know, accelerator, brake, gear, steering, I want to be in control of those if I need to be. And I want to be able to override it. Do I want a stalk, a shifter, something tactile? Not really. I mean,
you don't mind having the selection, the gear selector on the
really.
Screen, like a little strip.
No, I think, you know, if there are sometimes when you're doing some maneuvers, maybe you're getting in out of a situation, and it's handy to be able to, you know, quickly change gears. But really, how often do you touch that gear selector anyway? So I don't mind the button. Of course, you know, there are other considerations, like when the screen doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, it's just a single point of failure, isn't it? But right. How often do they not work? And then if
often
it doesn't
enough.
Work...
Often,
you know,
very
you know
often
what?
My car glitches.
So obviously if you're driving and that glitches and reboots, it's fine. The car is, you can still drive the car. But if everything is on, if everything down to gear selector is on the screen and then the screen crashes and glitches and reboots, then you're like, well, I can't go anywhere, guys. I'm waiting.
Sorry to the whole parking lot in this line. My car's rebooting.
I'm rebooting. You know what? It's probably the new normal that we'll all have at some point very soon.
Right, but they do really have to fix the screen crashing thing with this kind of failsafe. It needs like a failsafe mode. It cannot go down. You know, you have to be able to change gears whenever the car is on, whenever it's being operated.
And that is where I wonder. So we'll talk about the regulatory side of the yoke, but that's where I wonder how far regulators want to get into a fight with companies like this, because. Here, so as of the new year, we left Europe. Europe has a very slow, I think they meet once every 6 months or once a year or something to discuss things like this. Okay. And so our transport secretary, who has bought himself a Tesla, and so it's great. So the guy running trans, you know, for the government transport guy, bought himself a Tesla. So which is great, because now he's going, well, we need more chargers, you know. And so it's great because he said, well, now we're no longer in Europe. Why doesn't the UK become a beacon for self-driving away from the regulations in Europe? Why don't we move at a blistering pace? And of course, music to Elon Musk's ears. But I wonder how much regulators will get involved in the yoke. So can you advertise a car that is clearly illegal? Because there are so many places that you cannot put this steering wheel on. You cannot buy that steering wheel. And yet they're advertising that product. So how much of a fight do they want to get into with Tesla? Because they're selling you a product that you will not receive. You won't get that car. So if you see it and go, cool, I'll buy it, you won't get that car. And again, the same with the ability to make a gear change. Will regulators be happy that it's all software controlled and all just on a screen? I don't know what level they'll get involved in. I think obviously the steering wheel issues is not up for debate. You know, you can't have that wheel in some market. You can't have that wheel here.
It's a risky strategy, you know. Actually, you can't come and think of it, because I don't know. It's what's the Federal Motor Vehicle Code for stocks? So is there a mention of you need to have so going to the steering wheel?
FMVSS has definitely got a steering wheel code.
Definitely has a steering wheel code. Motor One reached out to NHTSA yesterday, the National Highway Transport Transportation Safety Administration, I think is what that stands for, and asked about, you know, is this legal? Is this legal? Because you look at the language, I believe you read the language yesterday, Kyle, and if you read the language in the code, it doesn't sound like it's a legal wheel. And
it needed to be 13 inches in diameter around the outer edge, but this wheel may already be 13 inches in diameter around the outer edge.
But it's
because still, technically the top is still an outer edge. So it might meet code. Who knows? It's hard to say.
So
the big thing here is what's probably going to happen if they can't figure it out is they'll send you a circular steering wheel. And then they'll say, don't worry, because in 6 months or a year or seven, we'll send you a yoke steering wheel that Tesla service can install for you, which they will then forget about, and we'll all have circular steering wheels.
Right.
Over-the-air update. You'll wake up one morning in the garage, and you'll have a yoke steering wheel.
You want a yoke steering wheel? Yeah. Chainsaw. There you go.
So just to finish my NHTSA story. So NHTSA got back to Motor One yesterday and told them they don't know if it's legal or not. So even they don't know. So, yeah, I guess we'll find out. They're probably, you know. And the whole thing too, if they do let like the gearless thing on the road and that results in accidents and injuries, I mean, Tesla's going to have a serious issue on their hands. So it's a risky strategy, you know, going stockless. Oh,
Brian has an interesting situation here. So Brian, I1 Tesla, we've done a ton of stuff with his Model Y and N3. Awesome guy. Hey, Brian. Good friend. And he has ordered a Model S performance before the refresh update.
Okay.
And so now, because that vehicle is no longer in production, what's he going to get? He's heard no word, I think. He's either going to receive a existing inventory Model S performance that he ordered, or he'll get a new one, but will he have to pay the $30,000 more for the Plaid? Right.
Someone in Germany had this issue. I read it. I forget where I read it. It was either Twitter or I saw this issue. Somebody in Europe had a call from Tesla to say you can either cancel your order or you can pay more.
Yeah, they used to just comp the difference if you were in this weird ordering thing. They would just say, you know what, you guys either will get to pay as a discount. They did this when the P100D came out over the P90D, and they just gave them free P100Ds, but it was only, again, back then, maybe it was 100 cars.
Right.
And
maybe they didn't have any inventory laying around to pull from.
Sure, yeah. And who knows? But I think Tesla is going to stick it to their owners on this one. I'm playing the negative Tesla guy here, but I really think they're going to stick it to Brian. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But if they don't, that would be amazing. If they say, right, Brian, we're going to upgrade you to the equivalent at no cost and everyone else who's in your situation, that's the right thing to do. So we'll see.
But it absolutely is the right thing to do. Absolutely. You placed an order and you're making your plans, you're selling your car or whatever, and now all of a sudden they're going to pull the rug out. I mean, that's just, we're just guessing here. We don't know what they're going to do, but they absolutely should. If that vehicle's not available anymore, they have to give you the next closest vehicle that's at least the trim that you ordered, at least offer that to you. You don't have to accept it. So let's keep on top of this, Kyle. Let us know what happens with Brian, because that's how many of these do you think are in process order right now with Tesla? They're not selling a lot of models.
Yeah, probably 1,000 or less.
I would definitely think less than 1,000. Think of the snapshot in time, Kyle, between the order and the people that haven't gotten theirs and they stopped, you know, making them. So, you know,
globally, though, how many Tesla stores are there? At least every Tesla store has one on order.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Well, they should do the right thing.
So yeah, I agree.
Getting back to Brian's issue here, what really jumps out to me is the fact that Tesla hasn't gotten in touch with him, you know, 2 days after the reveal of this to give him his options. Like, come on, people, this customer service is
that's not surprising. That's not,
you know,
that's
just, I want Tesla to be, you know, at the best or as, you know, top tier, you know, kind of company. And other auto companies are the same way. Maybe they might not reach out in this sort of situation, but they should, because it, from a customer care perspective, that's, you know, the customer is number one. That's, you have to be always be have that in front of you every decision. You know, you have to have like the customer, what he wants, you know, or she wants. Anyway, sorry. So one thing we haven't talked about yet either is the drivetrain. So like this is anything left with it here that you all want to talk about?
Looks nice. Waiting to see how it feels.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I really want to try either wheel, because once you are behind the wheel and you mash that accelerator to the floor, say you're in the Plaid Plus, the experience is going to be freaking crazy, man. 1.99 seconds. Right? Beyond ludicrous.
Beyond ludicrous.
Right. Under 2 seconds, 0-60, that's with the 1 foot rollout, so it might not be quite like that, but that's like a gut punch if you've ever accelerated in a Tesla Model S Performance. Now it's like, I don't know, two gut punches. I don't know. It's going to be like painful, that kind of acceleration. So I don't know. We've got the numbers here we look at, and the range for the, okay, this is interesting to me. Like, what's going on with the batteries and these cars?
Well, this is the mistake I made, I think, on Twitter. As the news was coming in, and we found out that this model has got 520 miles plus of range, right. and so I tweeted out that you get, for 17% more money from one to the next, you get 35% more range, and that's the difference. And I said, going from current 2170 technology to the new 4680 structural battery packs, and then happily closed down my Twitter and was sitting there in a quiet moment thinking, no, it's 18650. Like, these cells, Panasonic, right, have been making, and the chemistry's changed and improved over the years, but this is the existing technology. They still, so the Plaid version, so this, that one, that's now, that's the technology, that's not even 2170. So I made a huge mistake there, and nobody called me out on it, so I'll just admit it now and style it out. So that's amazing that this technology they've been developing all these years is able to deliver like that level of performance in the cars being delivered next month.
Well, these aren't the same. I mean, they're the same form factor.
It's the form factor, but it's different inside. They've made so many energy and density improvements over the years.
Right.
But
it's a much better cell than it used to be, for sure.
But in the same way of building a car that they have for however many years, it's achieving this level of performance is absolutely incredible. But the difference is, once they start making a structural battery pack, larger cells, it's just a different. It's night and day. 35% more, 34% more range.
But those won't. The new cells won't be going into this model S and X. Maybe the next gen S and X if they redo it from the ground up.
But won't it be Plaid Plus?
I don't think so. I think what they're going to do is they're going to make 125 kilowatt hour pack for that extra. What is it? About 108 miles, I believe. Extra. 108 miles. Is that 20 kilowatt hours? It sounds. 2025 kilowatt hours sound reasonable for that. So I think the energy density of the cells has improved so much that they have, and they've redone the modules inside. So I think they're more Model 3, Model Y like, in long strips. So there's only three or four modules, and the pack has better cooling, so they're able to say you're at the drag strip and you want to do a bunch of 0 to 1/4 mile runs, you can do them. I guess all day, or you can do them more times in a row. Was it five times more without any performance issues or decreases in performance, which was one of the things that a lot of people were saying the Taycan could do that the Model S couldn't do. So,
hold my hand up then and say, I'd made that assumption just based on, but I didn't think it through. I just thought, well, they're not releasing Plaid Plus because they need their own technology.
Right. Right, and there's there hasn't been a whole lot of transparency about what batteries are going into this at all. They haven't really until now. I think it was on Twitter or it was on the call that Elon mentioned it was the 18650 cells, yeah. Which is kind of, I thought when I read new modules, I thought, oh, okay, they've moved to the 2170 cells that are in the Model 3 and Model Y, but no, we're looking at the old, which is, it is what it is.
Well, but they are transparent with their cell supply contracts with Panasonic, which they recently re-signed for another year and a half or something. So, but like, we knew they had this supply of the cells coming from Japan. So,
but, like, I don't know, but if they, the, I don't know if the contract stated the form factor though on this contract. Did it, I remember looking, but I didn't see it.
It said it was a battery supply contract for the cells not made in Nevada. In other words, the cells made in Japan. So again, but you're right. It didn't say the actual form factor. So I am joining up dots which might not be there.
Right on.
I'm sure if they wanted to jump to even the 2170s that aren't that much bigger than the 18650s, that would have required a lot more re-engineering of the whole structure, the battery pack, the whole frame. So, you know, I mean, then it would have been a completely new car. I think that this makes a lot of sense, especially that they can squeeze that much more energy out of the new redesigned cells. You know, it makes a lot of sense to stick with that because, you know, they might have just had to scrap the car and start ground up if they were going to change the battery cells, the form of them, especially the new really large cells. That would have required a complete overhaul in engineering, and the level of sales for the Model S and X at this point just don't justify doing that.
Oh, I didn't point out actually too that the Plaid Model S and Model X and the Plaid Plus, of course, are tri-motor cars. So the rear axle is going to have two electric motors on it. So it'll be capable of torque vectoring. So that means like each wheel in the back will go at the exact speed as needed in a turn, because when you go in a turn, your wheels aren't going at the same speed. They're all revolving slightly different speeds. So if you can automatically... Am I still on here? Yes. Okay. I was so quiet for a second. I was like, did I get disconnected?
We're here. We're just listening.
Because I'm on a different screen, so I didn't see y'all. Anyway, so yeah, tri-motors, torque vectoring. And oh yeah, so this is a neat thing too. Talking about the batteries, we can now charge faster as well. So Kyle should be excited about that. Maybe supercharging has increased, and it has a max speed of 250 kilowatts. So
it's actually not increased. It's been 250.
What? Oh
yeah,
really?
Yep. But actually, it's been claimed 250, but no one's been able to achieve it, as far as I'm aware. Also, we don't know the curve. So
okay,
I'm not getting too excited about supercharging yet, because a peak speed and then how long you can sustain it for are two very different things. As Tom and I both know, Model S really struggles with pulling high current for long periods of time. My Model 3, by the way, I should bring this up, 80,000 miles almost on it now, year in 3 months, something like this. That car, because it's been supercharged a ton, you know, we road trip it, I have not been able to get over 180 kilowatts with a hot battery at version 3s. I hit 2 yesterday. The peak I saw was 180. So I think they might be pulling me back a little bit, but we'll see.
That's interesting. I think you'll be surprised, because like this, like I was saying, it's with the new battery modules and pack design, it gets cooled better. So that should help the curve and help peak charging speeds and all that.
So we'll see. I'm not hugely optimistic yet. I've yet to see really another EV have an e-tron charging curve, and that's really what I'm looking for. People just need to know charge to 80% and leave, not charge to 47% and pull up at zero. This is going to be another hurdle to electric vehicle road tripping that we'll have to get over.
Right. Will that not get better with the cooling?
Stuart had a nice question here. Will the Model S have CCS in Europe? That's a big question.
I don't think there's port for it.
Yeah.
Unless the taillights are different, there's no room.
Yeah, it's a bit like the XPeng P7 that came to Europe with CHAdeMO, always coming to Europe with CHAdeMO. And the reason being, that's the size. Well, the size of the hole is for the Chinese GBT plug, but that's the one that fits, and to make a hole in the car bigger is fabulously difficult in terms of redoing crash tests and structural things. So you got CHAdeMO. So it's in terms of the size, that might just be something that stays. So much as Tom said, so much of the car has stayed the same. They've changed what they can.
Right. Yeah. The form factor of the taillight, where the thing flips up, it might not accommodate the CCS charger for Europe. So I wouldn't get your hopes up, I guess. Bjorn Nyland made the observation the charge area didn't seem large enough. Yeah, and Bjorn is actually buying one. I saw he has a video up. Bjorn, of course, is the famous YouTube. I wouldn't call him a Tesla tuber. He's a genuine electric vehicle guy. He does great videos. All right. So anything else about this Model S and X refresher Lucid or the Plus we want to talk about?
Plaid
Plus, that's it.
It's going to be really stinking fast. Torque vectoring means it's going to send power to the right wheel when you need it. We'll see if it prioritizes front motor or rear motors for cruising down the highway for efficiency. Lots to go on here. This is going to be that torque vectoring unit they're probably going to stick in the Cybertruck and the Roadster. So we know it's going to be overbuilt. We know it'll take abuse. Teslas are always really good at holding up long-term from a drivetrain perspective, especially Model 3 with this new permanent magnet structure. We'll see how these new motors are in the rear. Overall, a significant powertrain upgrade that most people just don't truly understand until they'll get it out on track. But as soon as we get one, we'll be bringing it to our track. We'll be running it through performance testing. We're going to see how many times we can launch it before it overheats. Do all the things, and should be a blast. Can't wait.
And I just say that for any Tesla fan that is so happy about what's happened, you should send an email of thanks to Peter Rawlinson, because Lucid is the only reason they did this.
It's the totally agree.
It's the only. If it hadn't been for Lucid coming,
wow,
they wouldn't have been pushed into. And that's a cool thing, by the way. That I just think competition is amazing. It raises the tide and floats all boats. But hey. Lucid is the only reason that they're doing this.
I can't wait to do Lucid versus this thing. That'll be a blast.
Absolutely. The cool thing about it is, Martin, up till now, Tesla was the one that we were always saying, if Tesla wasn't there, BMW wouldn't be doing this.
Yes.
And if Tesla wasn't there, Volkswagen wouldn't have gone all electric. And, now it's flip-flopped a little bit. The carriage is pulling the horse, which is cool. And, finally, look at how long it took for somebody to come out with, and actually it's not out yet, but it'll be out soon, to come out with something that actually Tesla had to, catch up to, let's say, and which is awesome for the industry. And we've talked about this for a long time in the past. I believe strongly that this is how it's going to be. The startups are going to be the ones that are able to move quickly enough and drive the industry. And the legacy OEMs, they might make great electric vehicles. They might, the ID4, Kyle and I both fell in love with. We think it's a great vehicle. But it's not like setting new benchmarks. It's not an aspirational vehicle that, the other manufacturers are going to say, oh, shit, how do we compete with this? Mm. The startups are going to be the ones that do that. But we do think the legacy manufacturers, some of them at least, not all of them, are going to get on board and build really good electric cars for the masses. But it's the new companies, the ones that are lean, mean, that are lighter on their feet, they're going to be able to come out with something in 2 or 3 years that people just say, wow. And, I think that's where Lucid's at. And I'm with Kyle. I can't wait to drive that thing. Swinging back to the Model S, my biggest takeaway, although, as Kyle said, is the power, the drivetrain has massive improvements. It's all about the interior for me. The car's finally now has an environment on the inside that I would like to sit in and enjoy my drive. Never liked the initial interior. I think this looks great. Tesla nailed it. It's minimalistic. It's Tesla-ish. But it also makes you feel like you're in a substantial car. So that's my big takeaway on the new refresh. Good job on the interior.
Yeah, I can't wait to sit in it. Looks like a nice place for sure. All right. So we should probably mention, is there time looking at? Yeah, we should probably mention a couple other things besides Tesla that were in the news this week. So XPeng launched a massive over-the-air update for the P7. It added like 40 new functions at once. And it's also adding surrounding reality displays to its in-vehicle navigation system. Tom, do you have any quick one-liner about this?
Yeah, so XPeng has been doing kind of like Tesla. They do the over-the-air updates and frequent ones. It's not like, oh yeah, we do over-the-air updates and then you don't hear from the company. Right. One thing that's cool about Teslas is, every month or so, it seems like I get an over-the-air update. XPeng does that also. They've had 7 or 8 updates in the last year, I think, for their vehicles. And now they just released a massive one that had like 40 improvements. They added all things, a lot of functions for their navigation guided pilot. That's their new kind of like their version of autopilot. It's just being released now. It does. It takes you from point A to point B. You can set a navigation in your car and it'll take you the whole way, provided you're on kind of main or secondary roads. It won't go to some of the really small tertiary side streets yet, sure. But they're getting there. And then also the surround sound, the visual appearance, it's kind of and this is for Navigate on autopilot, the surrounding reality. They have a display screen that really shows you your entire environment around you, and the lanes, even buildings on the side of the road. And it looks really cool. I saw a really short video on it. I mean, it really, you know, it looks like, you know, artificial intelligence. It looks like you're driving down the road, you know, but and it definitely has its advantages where, you know, you can see the screen and it shows you everything around you. Now, of course, you can look through the windshield and see that too.
Right.
But you see that the car recognizes all these tiny little things that, you know, you're not, you know, you wouldn't almost think that it gets, but it does. So, you know, XPeng, watch them closely. They're with their autonomous driving. They're aiming to be the leader in China on this, and I think they've gotten off to a good start.
And they're coming to Europe too, right?
Yeah, they're coming to Europe now. I don't know if they're going to have the navigation guided pilot in Europe just yet, because it's really optimized for China right now, and they're trying to really be the best driving system in China. It's one of the things that when I talk to XPeng people and also NIO people about is that they're focusing on being the best in China, and they optimize their systems for Chinese road conditions. And Tesla really doesn't. Tesla, you know, is optimized for U.S. and Europe. While the systems, you know, they want to have their full self-driving in China, they really aren't focusing on that yet, like XPeng and NIO is. And they believe, those companies believe, at least for the Chinese market, that they can do better than the rest of the competition, the ones right. that aren't living in China. So that's why they're focusing on really nailing the Chinese self-driving systems.
Elon did mention full self-driving in China on the financial call with analysts on Wednesday night. And I believe he's saying, he seemed pretty bullish about the authorities allowing them to, you know, move ahead quicker than they have been. So, yeah, that should be XPeng. It'll be an interesting competition to see how that works out, because there are also some competing technology claims. A former Tesla employee has been accused of taking information and giving it to XPeng, which XPeng denies. And anyway, there's a whole thing going on with that. But anyway, in other news, GM plans to stop selling gas cars by 2035, or at least light-duty vehicles. That includes pickup trucks, which is, so this is kind of a big deal. And I think by 2040 they want to have a net zero carbon footprint for everything, for like the manufacturing and their vehicle output. So that's pretty good. I kind of think the market might get to there before 2035. So, you know, this is, it's good to see them make the target a little higher, more difficult. But I think the market might be still a little ahead of them there, so it shouldn't be too difficult. I don't know. You all can disagree with me with that if you like. But, okay, let's move on. So one last thing, I guess. Arcimoto, and this is more for me because I think this is cool. Arcimoto is set to acquire Tilting Motor Works. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see on the screen, this is not an Arcimoto on the screen, but this is a three-wheeler motorcycle kind of deal. And as you can see, the front wheels tilt to the side, so when you go around a turn, it's very kind of motorcycle-like, but you're still on three wheels, so you still got all that stability. And so in an Arcimoto vehicle, this could make the driving, you know, a lot more engaging and fun. I don't know, Kyle, do you have a quick word you want to say about this?
It seems pretty neat. I have an Arcimoto showing up before our next show. I have it for a few weeks, so we'll be able to
put it in.
Yeah. Showing up here, I think, on Wednesday, and I'm just going to go, I'm going to force myself to do all my errands around town, and I'm going to strap the dog in the back, put some doggles on her. And,
yes.
Poor Blue.
Yeah, Blue might jump out. I don't know. Ellie would just kind of sit there. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
Try them both. They should have, like, I think you can get optional doors, but it'd be kind of nice to have, like, a netting.
Yeah, they're sending the netting thing for me.
Oh, is there a netting
thing? Yeah, it's like rain protection. And I thought that's perfect for the dogs because I don't want them thinking they can jump out or anything.
Right.
And because they're also going to be behind me. Right. They're pretty good. If you're like, stay, and we have seatbelts for them, and we'll make it as safe as possible. But we need to do it for the TikTok, right? So got to get it for the video.
That's right. You have a TikTok channel?
We just started one. Outspec Studios. And we already have over 5,000 followers and well over millions of views, like 2 or 3 million views. I don't even know why we're doing YouTube anymore.
Are you dancing on any of these TikToks?
No. It's all car stuff. No dancing. Sorry. but there's such a limited competition base with car reviews that we're able to really capture a larger audience than on YouTube, where there's more competition.
All right. Inside EVs needs to get on TikTok, I guess.
Well, don't give them any ideas, Dom. They're going to have
you. Yeah, because Tom's going to be put in charge of that. Yeah. And so that one will have Tom dancing with his Taycan. Oh,
no. You don't want to see me dance. I am not a dancer. Good Lord.
Dom, before we cut out, I just want to swing back really briefly to the topic about GM phasing out all their gas cars by 2035 and how you mentioned that you think it's going to happen before that. And like, you know, it kind of seems far off, and it kind of does seem far off. It's what, 14 years away?
14 years now. Yeah.
Think about it. When did the first kind of modern electric car that, you know, still is in production or not in production, still available to drive? I'm not talking about EV1 back in the 90s. But in this latest phase of electric cars, you got to look back to, say, the 2008 model, the Tesla Roadster, right? I mean, that's kind of...
Or the iMeef. What about the iMeef?
Exactly. Yeah. And that was what, 2007, the iMeef? When did
iMeef was like, 06, 07, something like this. Yeah.
So
true pioneer.
Think about the fact that was...
Maybe 09.
It was right around the Roadster. I know that. So you think about, if we go to the Roadster, which was 2008, that's 13 years ago. Okay, right. So we're only 13 years into this latest electric vehicle evolution. Sure. Okay, so 14 years from now, that's going to go pretty quickly. It's gone pretty fast since the Roadster came out, right? And think about, and then that's the end of ICE. So I don't see that. What you're saying is you thought, and unless I misunderstood you, thought it's going to happen quicker than 2035. Yes. Yeah, I think we're going to have the majority of our vehicles by the end of this decade. I think the majority of the vehicles are going to have a plug, but I don't think ICE will be gone by 2035 yet. But I think it'll be reduced to such a small percentage, in my opinion, that, you know, it will be negligible at that point.
Right. But also for a small percentage.
Electric still does not work for pickup trucks. I maintain that. It doesn't work for a use case of a pickup truck with towing. You know, now that I've moved to Colorado, I keep finding myself in situations where electric does not work here in many places. Exploring deep into the mountains, you can't get 150, 350 kilowatt chargers on top of a mountain in the middle of nowhere. There's no electricity out there. And you can't just carry around extra batteries with you that easily. We're going to be doing this, by the way, for a trip across Montana with zero only on dirt roads. And the logistical nightmare of getting 6 electric zero motorcycles across Montana only on dirt with 2 electric support vehicles is mind-boggling. We have to carry so many batteries with us. And so I'm just not convinced that these problems will be solved. I think daily commuting, everyday driving, road tripping, all EV stuff, that's fine. But these off use cases, I'm not convinced yet.
Okay. And definitely public transportation, Kyle. Buses, delivery vehicles, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, those things are definitely. It's been some time, so my thinking here is like the rate of adoption is increasing, and as technology improves and prices go down, it's going to continue increasing. And so, yeah, it's just what I think. I think maybe when I say ahead of the market, I don't think they're going to be completely limited. Gas vehicles, there's still going to be some. There could be still some pickup trucks or some other utility kind of vehicles for now. But, I don't know. Well, we have a bunch of pickup trucks, electric pickup trucks coming out over the next year or so. So it's going to be interesting to see how close those get to solving these issues or these problems. And then we'll see what kind of solutions, you know, evolve over the next few years. But that's we're deep into the over our time, so we should probably call it a show. And so that brings us to the end of our show. And thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. Don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Malogny is at Tomalog, Martin Lee is at EV News Daily, and Kyle Connor is at Out of Spec. I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.